You may proceed.
May it please the court. Thank you. Now, procedurally, we're here because the court asked for briefing and argument following a stipulation and a disciplinary hearing panel recommendation to accept a public reprimand. And we believe the court wanted us to address help the court analyze the question of whether a reprimand is ever enough in a case involving an attorney who failed to keep good trust accounting records, failed to reconcile his trust account, then put his own money in the trust account, and then overdrew the account because he didn't know how much was in there.
In the olden days when we were in law school at Mizzou, we were taught that if you took money out of your trust account, no matter how small, no matter for what purpose, it was stealing, and we were taught you were going to get disbarred. Remember that?
Very well.
Okay. And it seems like, though, that we've kind of deviated from that, and we started with Belts, where the majority found that when he self-reported and he had some mental illness, we recognized those strong mitigating factors, and I think it was a 4-3 decision, suspended him and stayed the suspension because there was, and again, no harm to clients. Now, since we've adopted the rules on overdrafting of our trust accounts, it seems like the OCDC has been coming with us with these kind of cases, saying that in these overdraft cases where there's been no client harm, and it's maybe apparent, we're not sure, that the attorneys just aren't really understanding what to do with these trust accounts or what their purpose is, that we're not going to disbar them, and in this case, we're not even going to recommend a suspension or state suspension. It's just going to be a little slap on the hand of the public reprimand. What's the policy behind that, and where should we be going with this?
Well,
is there a difference because now these cases are coming to us because of the overdraft notice as opposed to a client reporting it?
That new rule certainly has made it more difficult because of the numbers, and I don't mean because we would be backed up if we tried them all. I just mean because of the numbers and the cases where that we've gotten them where there aren't client complaints.
You asked for the rule, though, didn't you?
I'm sorry? Yes, I think it's a great rule. We think the rule has and will continue to help educate.
And the Belts case is a little different because the person was allegedly, and we found mentally ill because of the result, but there was no overdraft. I mean, this is what we're trying to do is protect the public.
Exactly.
And when there's overdrafts, we'd never even know about it if there wasn't an overdraft.
Right. No, I think it's a great rule.
Totally lack of fiscal. I mean, I learned when I had my first bank account that you're not supposed to overdraft on your bank account. It's just not.
Well, as we learned in law school, especially not when it's not your money, and that's.
But you think it's just different here because there was no client harm and because he put in personal monies of greater amounts.
He did eventually, right? I mean, that's how he.
What is it? What did you base your recommendation on a reprimand?
Thank you. Okay, thank you. I mean, first of all, it is difficult, and to answer the question of are we too light? Tell us. We want to be strong advocates, but we also don't want to appear unreasonable.
Has he been ordered to trust account school?
No, but he's done it, or at least he's done those things.
Does he certify at the end of the trust account? Do you give him a test to make sure he learns something?
In this case, no. In the situation of whether we there's testing involved, the answer is there's not a post-test, but all of our trust accounting programs are very interactive. We have discussion. We actually give tests as part of the training, you could say. So there's some of that.
I think that question comes from the case we had last week,
right,
where someone supposedly went through the program and then still claimed not to have understood.
Right. I'm
how does that happen?
How did this one happen?
No, how does that happen? That he could go through the program interactively, engaged in all this, and do it again?
It shouldn't happen. I mean, It shouldn't happen. And lawyers ought to be held to know the rule. and perhaps even know the long-term
historical fear of being involved. I didn't go to a fine school like Mizzou, and I kind of knew you didn't.
Well, you know, there is. I want to answer Judge Smith's question, but there is an issue on whether we could still improve the rule, and it came up during last week's argument too. I mean, are there things that we could make more clear, that the court could make more clear, in what exactly a lawyer has to do to set up his trust account? A lot of states, and the ABA has recommended a provision where it tells the lawyers, this is what you have to do, and you have to be able to show at the disciplinary council that you have these receipt and disbursement record, that you have three-way reconciliation.
Well, that wouldn't resolve the problem here, though, would it? I mean, this gentleman obviously used client money for his own purposes.
Well,
it's not an accounting issue.
I think he would say that it is an accounting issue, and I don't think we have evidence to the contrary. I mean, what he did was he had his own money and some client money in there, and he thought he still had enough of client money in there when he was spending some of it as his own.
The evidence was he called the bank.
He even called the bank. I mean,
they told him he had the money.
Instead of doing conducting a reconciliation, he called the bank and said, well, I think that's way over what I need.
But you're not approving of his commingling of the money either. I know
no.
You're not. There just wasn't any evidence to me. It seemed like that this was pretty much really an intentional misappropriation, or at least a gross negligence, not a simple one-time, just got confused on one account and took something out. I mean, it was a long pattern of repeated behavior.
It was just the only evidence we have is just in February and March of 2010.
The commingling went on for a long period, though, because he didn't understand that.
After he put he sold the house that he'd been working on.
Prior to that time, there was no commingling?
Well, we don't have any evidence of overdrafts, but there probably was.
Again, no, there's no, I mean, the only overdrafts are in that time, but I think you were asking he didn't respect the difference between private and mm-hmm. and client funds, and that he used the trust account as sort of a general bank account.
I think that's true.
And was that intentional? Is there evidence of intent or gross neglect, or is it a matter of lack of education and understanding?
The part that was intentional, knowing intentionally, was that he had both client and his personal funds in the same account, and that way, and he called that his trust account. That much he knew. Whether he knew that was improper is a legitimate question.
And
he says he didn't know that was improper, and we in this case don't have any real reason to say we don't believe him on that.
Was there any other occasion where he did not have sufficient funds to meet in the account to cover his client funds? Is this the only occasion where? Only occasion where the trust account fell below the amount of it should have had if it was going to have all the client funds it should have had in it.
All through that period of the spring of 2010, there he was using the account as his own, and he was, when there was client money to have been held in there, which wasn't necessarily the whole time, and it's not that active of a trust account, yes, he was below that, not only overdrawn, but below.
But at other times,
he was below the amount that should have been held for the client.
Was this because, I mean, if you accept, it sounds like you're accepting is true, and of course we'll ask the gentleman when he gets up, but his statements that he thought he had enough money in it on that occasion because he called the bank, and you're not contesting that that's the case. Is there, are you suggesting there was some other time where he intentionally knew he had client funds in there and yet didn't have enough money in there? I'm trying to address the difference.
I think what you're saying is he didn't intend to be overdrawn, but he intended to write checks on the money that was trust account money rather than his own money.
Yeah. No, I think I'm still confused, or I want to make sure I say it clearly. I think he thought he had enough of his own money in the trust account to cover his own bills.
As opposed to that he was intentionally using his client's funds to pay his own bills.
I do not believe that to be the case. I don't think there's evidence of that. I mean,
in the cases that
I think that would be really important because we wouldn't be in the same posture.
In the cases that we had last week, where suspension was recommended and some, and the suspension was stayed and some terms were recommended, such as further education in this area and someone to maybe monitor the account and those kind of things, why, I don't see the evidence, or I don't have any faith that maybe this has been corrected and the public won't be injured potentially in the future because there's been no conditions attached to him as in the other clients or the other cases that we've had last week.
The last page of his brief, or attached to his brief, is his affidavit that he is that has completed, that he has looked at. He's taken some CLE classes, and that he has reviewed the IOLTA trust accounting manual and has established those practices in his own trust account. Well, so we do have that.
And we our rules don't really allow for reprimand with conditions anyway, do they?
The rules do not specifically allow it. Judge Price was here, at least. In the mid-90s, the court entered an order, a reprimand plus. And I remember, a reprimand plus on a certain case. And then Alan Harris was the name of the case. I think it was a reported decision. And then within a few months after that, we stipulated to a couple of cases where we did reprimand plus, and the court said, well, come brief us on the authority of the court to do that. And we did. And then we didn't do it anymore after that until the court adopted the probation rule, which still doesn't have reprimand plus. It is something that, that...
So if we were to want to ensure that the public not be harmed and have the same conditions as the case we heard previously, we'd have to suspend them and stay their suspension and put him on probation with the conditions that you monitor his trust account.
You would have to if you weren't convinced that he's going to take care of it, yes.
See, I understand. If I took a calculus test, if I took a course in calculus, and no one would trust me that I really learned it unless I had a test at the end. I mean, I don't understand this thing, but he read the manual.
Well, we do have,
he read the manual. What's that mean?
That, with suspensions, when they come... Some suspensions when they come back in, maybe all. We require them to take the multi-state professional responsibility exam. We haven't. We've tried to establish some monitoring after our ethics school program, but that isn't a test. And
don't you reach stipulations and agreements sometimes with counsel, even without regard to suspension, that they agree they're going to take certain CLE classes or take the ethics school or whatever, and you then give them an admonition or dismiss?
Exactly.
Or whatever?
Yes, we do. It's almost like an internal diversion, I guess you would
right.
say, where we make sure that they've done certain things in advance, and if they do that, then they get. Then we think they're making the effort, and they're establishing their own mitigating factor by it.
Do you ever do anything? Like, you're in charge of ethics. You work for this OCDC.
Right.
You're in charge of ethics for the state of Missouri and our profession and integrity. Do you ever do any testing just for your own knowledge of how much they learned from the ethics school or the trust account school, just for your own information? Are they learning anything at all? Does this testing and this training mean anything at all? Do you do any testing whatsoever, or the results that you're merely making a difference?
No, there's not a test within the program. We still
yes.
any
we
survey
can, yes,
or anything you
yes.
can do.
How
do we know you make
there
a
is
difference?
A test. The ultimate test is, do they come back?
That's not a test. I mean, it really.
But until then, but we can certainly look at whether we can establish some method of assuring that they at least understand the rules.
Going back to Judge Russell's first question.
Me too. Yeah, that's what I wanted to say too. We really appreciate your all's viewpoint on this, and of course we'll make the ultimate decision. But do you think that we should be looking at these cases differently when they come to us in the posture from the overdraft notification from the bank than we should be looking at them as we have in the past with the more serious sanctions? We just appreciate your opinion on this.
Right. No, I think that there are risks to the public anytime we deviate from too very far from that old belief that you were describing earlier. I mean, I think there is a risk to that. So that would be, from a policy perspective, that's how I would approach it. I mean, I understand, and Bell's wasn't the first case. I mean, there were some...
Bell's relied on numerous other cases as the author of it.
Right. There were other due cases in the 80s and 90s where there were some exceptions. From a pure policy perspective, it'd be nice if every lawyer in the state had that fear that even a mistake might cost me a license. I mean, I think there's value to that.
Yeah, but in Bell's, that was actually misappropriation of clients' funds and tens.
Yes, indeed, there was no question.
Tens of thousands.
Right,
hundreds.
Mitigation was the deciding factor, and not the.
And I think the question goes to where we're not dealing with misappropriation, misuse, fraud, where we're dealing with mistakes made and commingling. But the OCDC apparently has made the determination that it's a. That there hasn't been client harm or misuse of client funds for personal gain. Is that a different? Does that explain the different recommendations we've been getting in some cases?
Right. Well, we've been trying to also match what we've seen, but maybe and where we've misread.
Just a yes or no. Is that the kind of thing that you're looking at and making the different recommendations?
Commingling should get the attorney here. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not intentional commingling, for the most part,
how is it not intentional commingling? How can you not have intentional commingling?
If the lawyer really doesn't know, I mean, ignorance of the facts.
Well, the fact of whether or not your money is someone else's money. It's your money, someone else's money. That's commingling.
But in this case, the fact that we know is that he didn't reconcile his account. And by failing to reconcile, didn't know how much money was in his account, and therefore when he was spending it.
I mean, the act of commingling is putting two sets of money together that aren't the same.
That's true.
Is this the same as last week where people misunderstand the rule and thought that's okay? Is that what you're accepting, or was there knowledge that it was in violation?
Absolutely. I think it's the former. I think there's misunderstanding of the rule. And that's why I go back and again, you know, it seems like it shouldn't be necessary, but if the rule could be more explicit. I mean, I've always been frustrated, even from a prosecutorial perspective, of can we establish a violation when we don't have very explicit rules on the way lawyers have to manage the trust accounts. You know, maybe it's not a problem, but I think that there might be advantages to telling lawyers, not just in the comments to the rules that they ought to read the ABA's guidelines for trust accounting, but that it could be in the rule itself. You have to keep these types of records. You have to keep receipts of everything, disbursement records, journals, ledgers, and then you have to reconcile the individual client ledgers with the whole case.
Thank you. Any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
May you please the court? Court, I, as a beginner, I would like to apologize to the court for my conduct in this case. And since I've already admitted to the OCDs that I have violated the rules, my argument is going to be centered on the recommended sanctions that the OCD has recommended. In looking at most of the case law, the court tend to rely on the ABA standards in trying to sanction a lawyer when a lawyer such as me has violated the rules. And section 3.0 of the ABA standards states that there are four factors that the court will usually look at: the duty violated, the lawyer's mental state, potential actual harm caused by the lawyer's misconduct, and the existence of an aggravating circumstances. In this case, as I've argued in my brief, the court in prior cases look at the intent of the lawyer in sanctioning the lawyer. And intent is described, and as was held in the Coleman case, when the lawyer acts with a conscious or purpose to accomplish a particular result. And the next text is knowledge. That is defined as when the lawyer acted with conscious awareness of the nature or the intent or circumstances of his conduct. And the next factor is negligence. When that is shown when the lawyer fails to be aware of the substantial risks that
So when you open the trust account, what did you? Why did you open a trust account to begin with?
Yeah, Your Honor, I usually practice in personal injury cases. And by the rules, when we settle a case, according to court, we're supposed to have a trust account where the settlement proceeds is deposited and it's disbursed to pay for medical liens, other bills that were associated with the case, and then the attorney's fees come out of it. But what I've done previously was that I didn't want the account to be overdrawn. For a long period of time, I will leave some of my fees in the account to make sure that it doesn't come to zero, and the court would notify me for, with obviously.
Do you have a separate operating account in your office?
Yes. Yes.
So wouldn't that be? And did you have your own personal account where?
Yes. Yes.
Your personal expenses where you'd pay rent, whatever, mortgage,
yes.
whatever.
Yes.
So, what happened? How does this all get conglomerated?
What happened as a judge, I had settled some cases before and had left some of my own portions of the settlement proceeds in the trust account. So when this incident occurred and I made those checks made, I was with the understanding that I was withdrawing against the extra money that I had myself had left in my accounts for a long period of time. So before I did that, I called the bank. I was informed that I had in excess of what was being held on my clients, Thurman and Harris.
But didn't you make some payments out of your trust account for personal expenses like Home Depot, Lowe's, Wickley Glass?
Yeah, that was what was used for when I wrote those checks with the understanding that it was actually my own funds that was being
Rather than write yourself a check to your law office account.
That was the
checks for expenses out of the trust account.
Yeah, that was the mistake I in fact made here, and I really apologize to the court. I've been practicing for 20 years, and I've never had this in her occurred to me. It was a horrible mistake. If the bank had not informed me about that, and one of the mistakes I actually made in this case was actually to deposit $195,000 proceeds from the property into a trust account. Which, when I went and spoke with the OCDC investigator, she told me that that was obviously a no-no. So I didn't have any intention at all of misappropriating my client's money. This has been very embarrassing.
OCDC thinks that maybe the rules regarding this might be vague or confusing. Do you understand the rules on the operations and your
now,
requirements with the trust account?
Yes, since this incident occurred, I've really gone over the rules, and I begin to really understand it. It's not as confusing as it really should be. My problem was that I didn't want the account to be zero, so I always left some of my settlement proceeds, my own fees, in there to make sure that it paid for the bank fees and all that, so that it's not zero. So that was the problem. So when I wrote the amount, I thought it was coming out of my own funds.
And what do you do now to make sure you have client funds in and they're sufficient to
Judge,
cover?
Judge, after my meeting with the investigator, OCDs, she recommended that I go to the Missouri Trust. There were a bunch of forms that I've downloaded, which I'm able to reconcile my account with ledgers and stuff to assist me.
How can we be assured you won't make similar mistakes? I think a lot of the questions went to that in this situation you're asking for a reprimand, but we don't really have then any mentoring or probation or oversight authority in that circumstance to make sure no one's harmed and that you really do understand the risks here.
Yeah, Judge, it's true. I have really taken CLE hours. I went to New Orleans last year when this incident occurred, and I took about 2 hours of credit, and I saw the strict guidelines, especially that came from the presenter was from Washington, D.C., and Washington, D.C. has a very strict standards about these at attorney trust account.
Have you taken the ethics school class, or would you be willing to do that?
Certainly, Judge. Anything that I'm willing to do to really to make
would
sure
you agree prepared. To, if we gave you a public reprimand, would you agree with Mr. Phillips to have monitoring and auditing and oversight of your account for a period of a year?
Oh, certainly, Judge. Certainly, I'd be more than happy, because the idea is to protect the public and also to protect the public in this case. And I think that would be a step in the right direction.
Just your opinion, but do you think our law schools today, or do you think your law school education helped teach you about these trust account issues? Do you think maybe our law schools are failing in this area?
Yeah, it did. I went to law school about 20 years ago, Judge, and at the time, Mr. Tuckler, who was at St. Louis University, Dennis Tuckler, talked about co-mingling of funds. Obviously, it appeared very vague, but looking back right now, I can understand what that is. There were ethics courses that we actually took as to which is required that dealt generally some of these issues. But in private practice, a solo practitioner like me, looking back.
And is this covered on the MPRE?
Yes, yes.
It is covered?
It is.
Do you think that the rule could be clarified, or we should have requirements for periodic retaking of CLEs in this area, or how do we avoid what seems to be recurring misunderstandings that cause us great concern?
I think, Judge, I think if a periodic, I mean, CLE hours on ethics with emphasis on trust account probably would be a step in the right direction. Usually you go to some of these ethics seminars and it's very general, but this area, as for what I've been through for the past year, is really some serious, very, very serious matter here. And I think the more classes that I thought in this regard would probably help lawyers. As I steer the judge, I'm really very embarrassed about what had occurred here, and I'm obviously throwing myself to the mercy of the big court. And I think under these circumstances, there was no intent for me to really misappropriate my client's funds at all.
You seem very genuine and sincere.
Yes, that's all I can do. He's been very, very embarrassed. So.
Thank you. You have more time. But
okay, so that's why, as I said, Judge, I really apologize to the court. I've been in St. Louis for a long time, and I've never been in this situation.
Thank you.
Mr. Phillips,
yes.
You get the lectern. How many cases are you getting a quarter? Every 3 months, how many cases are you getting?
On the 2010, the first year, we had 281 trust account overdraft notifications. That's about what I think it's pretty close to what we expected from what the other states that are about our size got. It looks like it's already down this year, but it's a little early to predict that the rule has already helped. But it is certainly a valuable tool.
Some of these account fees and minor $5 or $10 things, or a large percentage of them commingling or major overdrafts?
Well, actually, 20% of them are bank error that we get. About 20% are accounting and math error. 12% failure to reconcile. Some of these probably overlap, of course. And a quarter, 25% or so, are premature disbursement, where the lawyer gets a settlement draft in, writes a check based on the assumption that it's cleared.
But it hadn't cleared
and
yet.
It hasn't, mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And then just 5% or so would consider commingling, and 1 or 2% would be misappropriation. And those you see.
Do you think this is a topic that maybe your office could conduct a seminar at law schools, or maybe, you know, we're required to get our ethics credit a little bit more frequently now, that this should be a constant ethics topic for our CLE?
Two answers, yes. You may have to help. We asked for the court's help in getting us in the door of the law schools. The bar has the, used to be called Bridging the Gap, nuts, mm-hmm. nuts and bolts, those kinds of programs mm-hmm. that are required. And certainly trust accounting is, and ethics programs are part of that. So, that may help. So, I mean, I believe it would help. And not just in, you know, the concept of that fear that we were talking about earlier, but also the practicalities of what, you know, what some minimum requirements are. Not just, you know, don't make any mistakes. It's how can I avoid making mistakes?
So 1 or 2% is the problem. That's really not a bit, you know, it's like five or six cases of 281.
Right.
You're saying, so because 95 to 98% could be cured by education that was attended and tested, perhaps.
We'll
see. That's the hope. I'm sorry.
The statistics didn't add up, though. There was 20% bank error, 20% math error.
That's one of those accounting errors.
12% failure to reconcile, 25%
what'd that come up with?
That leaves about 20 to 25% left.
Yeah, 20, 25.
And we only accounted for 6% of them.
No, it leaves, doesn't it leave about 7% left or so?
Why don't you tell us again what those numbers
are? I think I'm right. 20% bank error, 20% accounting and math, 12% failure to reconcile.
So that's 52%.
25% premature disbursement.
So you've got 23% that's left. So of the 23% that's left, you're saying 5% is commingling and 1 to 2 is misappropriation. So
how about if I promise to get the actual report to you?
Okay, that'd be great.
And to Mr. Armano as well.
I'm just worried that it's a 23% problem as opposed to a 1 to 2 to 6 or 7%.
Right. We would, is there, what I'd like to be able to do is offer to you that if the court is considering either probation with the suspension or some conditions to add to the reprimand in this case, then offer to submit some suggested recommendations either that we can try to agree to.
But can't you informally, just like we just discussed, I mean, I couldn't ask you here, but can't you just informally say, he's already agreed to say you could monitor him and you can audit him and do everything else for the
we
next
could.
Year. Can't
right.
you just do that?
Right, we could. If the, and we will, if absent a court order to the otherwise, we'll do that. But if the court wants us to do it more formally, then we'd be happy to submit some conditions.
Or you could submit some a supplemental stipulation to educational and monitoring conditions.
Yes.
Or deal with the 100, when you give us the figures in 100%, how do you deal with each area to make sure that, you know, that 1 or 2% that are really the bad actors are taken care of and you can resolve the others. Give us some broader, you know, this is not related to you, sir, but give us some broader resolution than case by case so we can actually be consistent.
We'd love to do that. Thank you.